The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Churchill said, "Those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it." Kevin Hallinan believes that certainly applies to business. Welcome to Winning Business Radio here at W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. And now, your host, Kevin Hallinan.
Welcome back to Winning Business Radio. Thanks for coming back. The mission of this show, as regular listeners know, is to offer insights and advice to help people avoid the mistakes of others. You know, to learn best practices, the how-tos, the what-tos, the what-not-tos, to be challenged and certainly to be inspired by the successes of others. It's interesting that every successful person I've ever talked to has had some form of failure in their lives and careers. So while we all have to get our knees skinned once in a while, as I say every show, I'm driven to keep those scrapes from needing major surgery. Let's endeavor to learn from history so we don't repeat it. Today, my guest is Suzanne Schultz, CEO of Canvas Fine Arts, a firm she founded in 2007 to assist visual artists with their art careers. Suzanne has grown Canvas Fine Arts from a small gallery in Acton, Massachusetts, to a player on the world stage representing well over 100 artists. With art having been exhibited locally and internationally, CFA engages corporate commissions with major players like the Legal Seafood Group and Revlon International. Artists have received both national and international press, gracing numerous magazine covers, receiving notable reviews. Suzanne says that there are not enough venues to support the ever-growing population of professional artists. She has established a unique platform intuitively following global trends on the way art is seen and sold. She's a former co-host for the Boston Network news program It's All About Arts. She has written and contributed to Revolt, a New York City-based paper, and the national publication Art Chaser. She's still contributing to BNN TV's It's All About Arts as a recruiter and is the Boston editor for Art 511 magazine in New York City, Art Beat magazine, the Boston City paper, and has launched her new column Exposed, Secrets of an Art Rep in It's All About Arts magazine. Most recently, Suzanne leads a seminar called Exposed in order to encourage artists to get out of their studios and embrace the marketing opportunities in their trade. She's been invited to speak at Boston's prestigious Copley Society, the Art New England Magazine, the Providence Arts Club, as well as the Masterworks Museum in Bermuda. She's also a faculty member of Sotheby's Institute of Art in New York. Suzanne is also affiliated with many of Boston's nonprofits and is also a member of the Independent Curators International, ASID, which is the American Society of Interior Designers, Women's Lunch Place, and is a board member of the American Friends of Masterworks Museum. Suzanne, welcome to Winning Business Radio.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you could take the time to be here. So I like it when listeners get a chance to hear about a guest's background, just to get a flavor of kind of where they came from, where they started, and how they got there. So let's start with the easy ones. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a little town outside of Boston called Southborough.
Okay.
Sort of out by Framingham, Natick area. Mm-hmm. Little cute suburb.
Yep. And what was your family like? What did your parents do? Do you have siblings?
I do have siblings. My a pretty conventional family. My yep. father was an engineer. Mm-hmm. He worked for a company. Well, I guess he worked for the Navy, Natick Labs, and he designed thermodynamic clothing for the Navy for people going down in submarines and firefighters. And he was quite the brilliant man. Wow. And my mom stayed at home for a number of years, and then she. I don't know exactly what she did, but she worked at Bose Corporation for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, and I have two sisters and a brother.
So for those that don't know, Bose has a big presence in, I want to say it seems to me like it's Framingham, but it could
Framingham,
be.
Framingham, yes.
Is it? Yeah. And I've been in, there's one spot, just to take a quick aside, just because it's interesting. There's one building in Bose that has this round, if you've been in here, it's this round, like, pavilion. And if you stand in the center of it, it's a perfect, like, acoustic chamber. It's just the coolest thing. My brother told me about it.
My mother never told me about that.
Well, my brother was an engineer and he did some work with them. He didn't work for them, but he did some work with them at some point. I don't know.
Oh, neat.
So were you into art or were you an artist as a kid?
You know, I think most kids like art. And I often wonder when some people just put down the crayons or the paintbrush and other people keep going. I feel like I was a pretty creative kid and I remember doing some school newspaper covers and winning creative writing awards, but I didn't stick to that path. And I didn't rediscover art till really my 30s.
Wow.
I didn't grow up in a family that was big on going to museums or theaters. Mm-hmm. You know, we just didn't do that kind of stuff. So in my 30s, I somehow discovered that. And I never got a degree, but I started taking classes, you know, art history, interior design, things of that nature. And I felt like I fell down a rabbit hole and was discovering things I didn't know existed. It was really exciting.
Yeah, really good rabbit hole.
A good one, yes. Yeah, it was a whole new world opening up. It was really pretty neat.
So you founded Canvas Fine Arts in 2007. So I want to ask two sets of questions there. First, tell us about how you started and why you started the company.
Well, my background really was I married young and I was a stay-at-home mom for about 20 years. I never had a job.
Right.
And after a divorce, I met an artist and I think it was the first artist I ever met. I had read about him in the Globe and he had a pretty interesting story. And I went up to see him and I started taking a lot of people to see him. He was a Colombian-born artist and sort of impoverished, living in Lawrence, Mass. And he was discovered by a man who was building some condos. And the man sort of came upon him and made him an artist in residence at these condos. And it was a little bit of a Cinderella story. And his name is Javier Osorio. And, you know, hearing his struggle, you know, creating all these paintings, having no place to put them, not knowing how to get into galleries, I decided to start a business very naively.
Yeah.
Having absolutely no art pedigree, having no education or no job experience, starting a business seems a little silly.
Yeah.
But it seemed like the right thing to do at the time.
Hey, we have our first listener question. Marie says, why do they, I think I know the answer, but I'll let you take this one. Why do they always say starving artists?
You know, they say starving artists because artists don't make any money. I think that needs to stop. I think artists need to, and one of the things I do is try to teach artists the business of being an artist and learn how to make money. So it is the only profession that has the word starving in front of it, and we hope that will change at some point.
There's another question we'll get to, I mean, right now, because I think it's, hold on, I just lost it. Let me just pull it up one more second. Timmy said, can anyone get into this field? And I'm not sure why the context, so I'll ask you to answer it two ways. One, being an artist, can anyone become an artist? And two, can anyone represent artists? Because that's what you do.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of people who do what I do. You know, I've Googled, I've searched high and low, and the problem, the fly in the ointment with my business is the starving artist concept artists can't usually afford to hire people to work for them. So that's a little bit of a problem. But what I try to encourage people, and I know you probably do too, if you start a business, whether you're an artist or you're an engineer or you're opening a store, you have to shell out some sort of investment, whether it's in a physical space, whether it's in an assistant, whether it's in, you know, whatever. So yes, anyone could become an artist rep if they, you know, have an idea of what that means.
So let me ask this. Talk about what it was like for you to start the company. So, and kind of what made you decide? You saw that artist, Javier.
Yes.
You got connected to him and you realized, wow, did you realize he needed help or did you realize, wow, you see an opportunity or what was your thinking?
I didn't really see an opportunity. And again, I had no idea this was going to become a business that, you know, would span over, I'm going into year 13.
Yeah.
But I really thought I really wanted to help this person and help other people like him. I just saw this need. And again, I was newly immersed in the arts and, mm-hmm. and just was kind of gaga over it. So, you know, the type of personality I have is somebody who does things, you know, I kind of jump in.
Yeah.
I don't ponder and think and wait and ask questions. So I rented a gallery space in Acton and I just, you know, put out my shingle and started working with Javier. And in the first year, you know, I got him a residency in Bermuda. A residency is an opportunity for an artist to go to a different town or a different country. Mm-hmm. And they usually get lodging, they get a studio space. And, you know, so it's a great opportunity for artists. He had a Boston show and a lot of things started happening. And then I got my second artist and my third artist. And, you know, over the last, you know, 12 years, I've worked with over 100 artists and, you know, not just in the United States, but mm-hmm. internationally.
That's really cool. So what have, in terms of your business, what have your biggest challenges been thus far? Just two or three of your biggest challenges.
The biggest challenges, I believe, are every year, you know, the way society is now, we're very consumer oriented. We're very big box stores. Mm-hmm. Less and less people are interested in the arts. You know, less people go to theater, less people are buying original art. A mm-hmm. lot of galleries are closing. So it's harder for me to find clients, buyers, collectors, galleries to support these artists. So I would say that's probably the toughest thing.
Interesting.
The second challenge is to find artists to work with, because again, in art school, they don't really teach artists business. It's almost like business standing on your head. They kind of expect the phone to ring. It's kind of, they think they're going to be discovered without putting a normal business plan together, putting in a normal effort that other business people do. You know, it's very idealistic at the beginning. And most of the artists that I work with are over 50. I actually have a 90-year-old artist that I work with.
Oh.
And they've had life and business experience, so they're less idealistic and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of more into understanding what needs to be done in terms of the strategy.
Most artists probably don't get into the field. I was going to say business, but it's not. It's a field to monetize their work. They get into it for the love of it or because they've got a gift or a talent.
Yes and no. You know, unfortunately, we hear, you know, Christie's something just sold for $100 million. Mm. And everybody goes crazy and thinks, I can make a picture and I can sell. And they don't understand the reality of what the art world is really all about. And secondary markets like Christie's and auction houses, you know, definitely are very different than, you know, you're an emerging artist starting out trying to sell a painting. It's going to be incredibly different. And it's not always about the picture. It's about a lot of other things,
you know, such as
who you are, what your story is. Mm-hmm. If the right person says the right thing about it, you know, it's interesting. They just had, you know, Art Basel, which is the big art fair down in Miami, and it's the first week of December. And there was all this press about a banana, a real banana that
I didn't hear the whole thing, but go ahead.
Yeah, duct taped to a wall, and somebody bought it for $120,000. And it's perplexing. It's a banana that you could buy at the grocery store for 12 cents and a piece of duct tape. So what is that? You know, is it the emperor's new clothes? Is it a publicity stunt? Is there really some value in that that we don't understand? You know, it's an interesting market.
Art is certainly in the eye of the beholder, as they say, right?
It is. And, you know, it's all really different, too.
Yeah.
There's contemporary art and, you know, things that we see at, you know, like the Institute of Contemporary Art mm-hmm. are there to, the artists are usually trying to shed light on a political or social or some sort of situation in the world. It's very different than going to see a Monet at the Museum of Fine Arts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not created equal. And some art is meant to make you see the world you live in very differently than you might see it today. And other art is meant to be beautiful and soothing and represent something real. So, you know, it's all different.
That's really cool. Hey, we've got three listener questions, but we're going to take our first break. We'll come back and we'll start with those questions. We'll be right back with Suzanne Schultz.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Have you ever dreamt of being on the radio? Well, now is your chance. Be a radio show guest on the number one ranked internet radio station and promote you and your business for free. Yes, you heard it, free. Business advertising right here on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 now to get booked on one of our shows. That's 561-506-4031. Get your free advertising now.
Hi, this is Ian Hill, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
You can tell what's wrong with a car just by sitting next to it at a red light. You can tear down a big block engine in 26 minutes. You know cars. We can help you find more of them to work on. And together, we can get your small business moving in the right direction. At AT&T Advertising Solutions, we have more ways to reach more people. With print, online, mobile, and direct marketing, AT&T Advertising Solutions has local advertising experts to help your small business find more customers. Call 1-800-GET-REAL to learn more. AT&T, rethink possible.
Be seen, be heard on the internet's number one ranked radio station right here in West Palm Beach. What a way for your business to have a voice. Now is the time to advertise your business on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 for a deal you won't refuse. Again, that's 561-506-4031. Don't wait. Call now.
Now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind, to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with Suzanne Schultz, CEO of Canvas Fine Arts. And I want to jump back. We'll take three listener questions right here. Greg said, do you find it easier for artists to get their work out these days versus, I guess he means previous days?
It depends. It depends on how open they are to the alternatives to the galleries. And that's one of the things I've really focused on in my business is, quote, alternative spaces, unquote. And I was given a statistic early on in my business from a museum director that said only 6% of the population goes to art galleries or museums. So I wanted to start showing my artists in the other 94% of places, working with high-end furniture stores, hotels, restaurants. And so for an artist who is okay with veering from that, you know, historically traditional gallery mode, they have more opportunities than ever to get the art out in front of people.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I've noticed more and more I can judge good art. I can judge bad art, I think, but I've just seen more and more original pieces in stores, as you said, hotels, workspaces, you know, buildings, building lobbies and stuff. Downtown.
Yeah, and working with, I've been very fortunate to work with furniture companies and makers like Thomas Moser. And if you don't know Thomas Moser Furniture, it's made here in America and made in Maine, hardwood, like great quality. And for an artist to have their name or their brand next to a brand like a Thomas Moser too, it really does help elevate them in a way. So, you know, you want to be really careful about what venues or retailers or hotels you align yourself with, because you want to make sure it's quality. Yeah, when you put your name next to somebody else's.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So here's the next question, and forgive me, listener, if I don't pronounce the name correctly. It looks like Khalif. Can an artist make a living without representation?
Yes, if they're willing to put in the work. In terms of making the submissions, you know, doing the follow-up, you know, you have to make an effort. A lot of artists, I think, feel if they have a great product, or, and I know the artists don't always like the word product, but, you know, a great body of work, that people are just going to flock. But you can absolutely, I've worked with artists who are really good at self-promoting, you know, so just coming up with your business plan and following through, you can absolutely be successful.
So two things come to mind. One, is it really the norm that an artist is going to have that background or experience or know-how? And two, wouldn't there be a lot of, like, starts and stops? Wouldn't it be, sorry, I am pitching you. I don't really mean to. I'm going to pitch you here in a few minutes, but wouldn't it be better served to work with somebody who's made all the mistakes and knows how to do it correctly?
Absolutely. I mean, for some reason, artists think they need to do everything on their own. Mm. I mean, if you're a chef, I mean, are you seriously, you know, seating guests when they come in and then, you know, handing them the menu, then running into the kitchen and cooking? Most successful businesses have employees. Mm. I have several. I can't do everything myself. For some reason, artists feel that they're supposed to do it all on their own. And again, there's so many different ways to sell your art or promote your art. And a lot of artists are very much tunnel vision with the standard.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the gallery mode is a bad mode. I have a gallery and I love the whole model. But when you work with somebody else, it opens up a lot of ideas and thoughts and potential opportunities that you might not be able to get for yourself, because again, they've been doing it and they've been out there and they've already created, you know, that infrastructure.
You work with visual artists, and I want you to define really what you mean by visual artists.
Well, you know, I have also worked with authors. I love working with authors. I've worked with musicians. I didn't love that because they usually go on stage at 10 at night and that's the time I want to go to sleep. So an art show usually goes from like 6 to 8. So that's kind of reasonable for me. But I really feel like I wanted to stay really close, you know, be really specific in what I'm doing. So visual art is something that you look at. So a painting, a sculpture, a photograph is what I really focus on. But if I ever, you know, find an opportunity to work with an author, I always will. To me, that's really fun.
That's really cool.
And it's so easy to sell books. Like, they're $20. They're not $20,000.
Yeah. That's a pretty big difference.
It is, yeah.
So I noticed on, it was on your website, some quote things or services that you do for those artists. And I want you to talk about what these mean. Artist representation and PR, coaching for professional artists, workshops and seminars. I do want to ask you about the exposed and then portfolio reviews. So let's start with artist representation and PR. Talk about what that entails.
That's when an artist will engage Canvas Fine Arts to do the actual work for them. So they'll come to me and say, this is what I have. I have this body of work. This is what I've done. This is where I want to go. And then we kind of hatch a plan. And then I do the submissions. Mm-hmm. I set up the shows. You know, I take care of all those details. We send out the press releases. We do the social media, the email contacts and e-vites and things of that nature. So that's kind of the big package, like the full blown. They're like, I don't want to do it myself.
Right.
I want you to take care of it for me. And in a lot of ways, you know, I have an assistant. You know, if I want her to find places for me to go and speak, I think it's better to have her make the phone calls than for me to make the phone calls.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the artist sometimes is best being one person removed from the process, because it's easier for me to talk about how wonderful they are, the things that they've done. I think it's hard for people to promote themselves.
That's a good point. And by the way, are you limited in geography, or can you work? I know that you've got exhibits that are international. Asia, I think, right? Either have or had. So are the art, do the artists need to be local? Do the exhibits need to be local?
No, they've been both. Yeah. I've had exhibits all over the world. I've had clients from Canada, Peru, Italy, London. I'm currently working with a woman from Bologna, Italy. And and she doesn't need to be here. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's easier if they're not here. You know, they're where they are. They're doing their thing. And I just take care of everything. They don't have to worry about running into Boston every 5 minutes. And if you have a good representative, you know, again, you don't necessarily need to be in the room. Sometimes meeting the artist is an absolute plus. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it's not necessary. You know, it really depends on the personality. Some of my artists are really social and comfortable around people, and some who are shyer don't really, don't want to be there. They don't feel comfortable. Sometimes, you know, when you think about it, they're putting their soul on the wall. It's very, it can be very uncomfortable for some, and some really just thrive in that environment. So it really depends on the individual.
And then, so the logistic of shipping might apply, right? You'd have to get art from them or to an exhibit space, right?
Yes. So I've been working with her for about 7 months, and she shipped all her paintings from Italy. And it's interesting. She is Italian, and her subject matter is Native Americans.
Really?
Yeah, I know. She loves the Native Americans and their culture and what they stood for and stand for. And, you know, it's been pretty, people are really fascinated by that. And they're absolutely beautiful, beautiful works of art. You know, she's really, from my perspective, captured the spirit.
That's really cool. Hey, Anne has a question. The third question, I realize you already answered, but summarize it for her. She may have tuned in late. What brought you to do this for a living?
It was quite accidental, you know, meeting an artist and seeing a struggle, seeing him going to the studio, creating paintings every day, and they were just stacking up and piling up and honestly not knowing how to get them out into the world.
All right. So a couple of other things you mentioned on the site, coaching for professional artists. What's that look like?
So the coaching is, you know, hatching that plan, but the artist is, you know, has to implement it. So we get on the phone, we start with, you know, I always ask them to send me a list of goals. And, you know, no matter how lofty they are, you know, you never want to discourage somebody, but you want to encourage them to figure out how to actually get there. And usually that means working backwards. So, you know, so we work, usually we do 2 calls a month, and it creates a sense of accountability. You know, so we work on the plan, but they're the ones who have to actually do the physical submissions and their press releases and things of that nature.
So you do workshops and seminars on how to sell art. And I'm just scrolling back up because I want to get it right. Exposed, Secrets of an Art Rep is the column that you write. The workshop is Exposed, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a great thing for artists because, again, a lot of them don't understand what they need to do in terms of the business side of it. And, you know, once they realize it's just the same concept as any other business, you know, there's no magic wand and it's kind of dry stuff like a business plan, you know, and there's a real power behind a business plan. You jot down a few things on paper and it becomes a real attainable thing. And where do you want to be in 6 months? And so I kind of go through 10 steps, 10 topics in a very brief way. And, you know, sometimes I do things more in depth or I bring in guest speakers. You know, we do topics like, you know, how to, you know, so you want to be in an art magazine. And I'll bring in a publisher of an art magazine and she'll give them tips on how to approach writers, how to approach editors, what not to do, what not to say. And again, it's, you know, it's not rocket science, but it's things that people just really need to hear.
It would seem to me, and we mentioned this briefly earlier, but it would seem to me that most creatives aren't great in business. It's an observation and more of a supposition, I guess, but it seems to me that the wiring of a creative is not the same as the wiring of a CEO, let's say.
It's not. It's that left brain, right brain.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting. Somehow I fell into this sort of niche where most of my clients are second career artists. Mm-hmm. And most of them have had incredibly successful first careers. I worked with a gentleman who, you know, he was one of the founding people who invented in vitro fertilization. I've worked with a Playboy cover girl. I've worked with former CEOs and doctors, lawyers, like people who really know business and have been successful. But when they slide into that art part, they're allowing themselves to go to a place of creativity and kind of loosening the grip on the business side.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, like I said earlier, there's no shame in hiring people in your business, you know, whether it's somebody to come in and wash the windows or somebody to pay your bills, you know, or an accountant. Every business does it. And it doesn't mean you're lacking, but it's good to know where to put your focus.
Absolutely. Hey, we'll come back right to that point right there. We're going to take our second break right here. We will be back with Suzanne Schultz in just a couple of minutes.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
This is Felix Griffin, drummer for MOD Classic. You're listening to W4CY Radio. Thank you so much.
Is your pet overweight? Suffer from itchy skin and coat problems? Showing signs of food allergies? Then do your pet a favor. Stop by Fiesta Pet Deli, South Florida's original and only fresh food deli for pets. Prepared daily and FDA approved with products like Bravo, Nature's Variety, and BioComplete. Listen, dogs and cats are carnivores. 90% of their diet should be meat. That dry kibble you put in their bowl every day contains less than half of what their bodies require. Veterinarian owned and operated, Fiesta Pet Deli has one mission: to get your pet as healthy as possible. Give them a call today at 954-971-2500 or come check out their new store at the Festival Flea Marketplace at Sample Road and the Turnpike in Pompano, Florida. They also offer free local delivery, shipping throughout the United States. Check out their website at www.realfoodforpets.com or just Google Fiesta Pet Deli. If you truly love your pet and care about their health, stop by Fiesta Pet Deli. Call today at 954-971-2500.
Hi, this is Lindsay Schoolcraft at Cradle of Filth, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
Have you ever dreamed of having your own radio show? Well, W4CY Radio makes dreams come true. You can be a radio personality on the number one ranked internet radio station in West Palm Beach, Florida. We can be heard in 105 countries and all U.S. states. Promote your business. Earn up to $10,000 per month and more. It's all up to you. Have fun and be heard. Call 561-506-4031. That's 561-506-4031. Start your radio show now.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind: to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with Suzanne Schultz, CEO of Canvas Fine Arts. And the next topic I want to ask you about, Suzanne, is you do portfolio reviews. And as I was prepping for the show, one of the questions it's kind of a hard question, not for you, but it's, you know, kind of hard maybe for people to think about or talk about. But the question is, how do you know and how do they know if their art's any good?
So if that's a really good question, because a portfolio review can mean a few different things. Mm-hmm. You know, I am not an academic. I'm not a professor of sculpture or painting. So when you come to me for a portfolio review, it's going to be a very commercial type of review where I'm going to look at the art and say, these are the kind of galleries I think that would be interested, or you should really think about working with interior designers. This is right up, you know, this is like perfect stuff to incorporate into interior design.
So it's not going to be like the class I took, I think it was junior year, Art History 101, where you were looking at brush strokes and the and you could, you know, I don't remember, but you at the time you learned to recognize an artist by his or her style or whatever. It's not that.
No, it's not that, but I do recommend, and I find this to be very important, and I do have my artists sometimes find mentors that are more into that academic side to help them with the actual creation and the painting. And, you know, maybe you should try to do this work on paper instead of canvas, or try this or do that. Like, I don't, that's not my my place. You know, I don't have the education, and, you know, I'm not the professor, so I wouldn't dare mess with that. But so when they come to see me, it's very much about how we can market and sell it. So it's a portfolio review to look at their work and say, this is how I think we should package it. And, you know, what the interior design community is looking for will be very different than what a gallery is looking for. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be working with retail, you know, it can't be anything political. It can't be nudity, you know, so that's a different kind of art style that you would want to promote. So again, I can get really specific with things like that, but I can't tell them how to change their painting.
Sorry, there was another question here, but I'm not quite sure what it means. Let's read it together. Can we look at it being, it is what people like more than procedure? Oh, okay. Yes. So you have the view of not necessarily what people are going to like, as you said, but more of what's going to be acceptable, marketable, right?
Yes. And what's interesting is, this is what I say to my artists all the time. We have to find your people, you know?
Yeah.
And once you identify who that is, do you know a painter named Peter Max? He's still living. He did a lot of album
that does ring
in
a bell.
70s.
Yeah, that's why. Okay, yes.
He's had an incredibly successful career. He was on the cover of Vanity Fair a few years back. I don't know how many millions he's made, but he was very smart. You know, the people who buy his art may not buy art, but they are buying a bit of the 70s. He's marketed himself to the people who sat in their, you know, in their dorm rooms listening to whatever albums he was on, you know. So
the Stones, Floyd, Zeppelin, whatever.
That kind of stuff. He's that era. So people, you know, men ages, you know, 55 to 65 or 70 is probably his demographic. And, you know, he sells art on cruise ships. People who go on cruise ships, you know, typically aren't people who go to art galleries. So they're having an experience maybe for the first time. And again, I'm generalizing, and people who go on cruise ships who go to art galleries, don't yell at me for saying that, but they'll recognize Peter Max's name and they'll buy his work. So again, we have to identify who is your audience. And once you do that, it's pretty easy. So are you an artist who's, you know, portraying, you know, creating art, portraying something that's nostalgic, you know, scenes in Paris of snowflakes, or are you making a statement about climate change? So again, the person who's interested in a nostalgic scene would be a different person that would be interested in the climate change. So it's not this gigantic audience. So once you figure out what it is and who it is, it just makes it a lot easier to go after those groups.
That's a great question, Ralph. And Greg asked, and you sort of answered it, but expand a little bit, what kind of things sell the best? It sounds like, again, it's specific to the audience.
Yeah, there is no answer to that. If I knew that, I would be very happy. It surprises me what people buy sometimes. You never know. I mean, I feel art is something, you know, we love to do things online, but I feel still it's a thing that people really want to still go out and see and stand in front of. And I've seen people have some really emotional responses looking at something, and, you know, they don't expect it and they don't necessarily know why, but it can, you know, a certain color or a certain landscape can, you know, evoke a memory of something very pleasant or something painful. And, you know, it's interesting to see what people will buy. And I think it sometimes shocks the buyer too. You know, they might be somebody who's very conservative or traditional and, all of a sudden they're attracted to some crazy abstract piece for some reason, you know? So it's kind of fun for people to kind of allow themselves to, you know, just sort of put their guard down and see what speaks to them.
It's interesting. My wife and I were down in Tampa actually it was earlier this year, and my daughter and one of her friends took us to the Dali Museum.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I mean, I can't say I'm really an art enthusiast, but I do, you know, I don't go to the museums all the time. When I do it, they're interesting. I like it. But he was just out there. He was just in that. He wasn't weird or anything like that, but he was like a groundbreaker. So he did such different stuff. you could see pictures of he and his wife. They looked fairly normal back in the day out and about. But there was this one image he created, which was, and this was way before computers, right? I mean, years before computers, but it was a pixelated image of Lincoln. And if you stood up close to it, you could see the angles, kind of like the modern camo shirts, you know, how they like that digital angles and squares and rectangles, whatever. I mean, you couldn't tell it was Lincoln. If you step back to a certain point, they had a line on the floor. The image of Lincoln came into view really clearly. It didn't look pixelated anymore. And within that, you could see, I think he had an image of his wife and himself. It was just the coolest thing that just kind of defies my imagination, you know?
Yeah. No, you know, that whole surrealism, too. Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating. He did a lot of really cool things, and there's so much symbolism in his work, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with work like that, you're always discovering new things in this one painting.
But he seemed to be somebody that did commercialize his art. He made money, you know?
He did. Andy Warhol made money, and, you know.
Oh, a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's still possible. You know, I feel like it's like anything else. There's too much of everything in our world now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I met, you know, this artist 12 years ago, there was a little bit of a mystique to it. Mm. You know, it wasn't like, you know, now there's First Fridays and studios opening, and it's great. The artists are a lot more accessible, but, you know, there is also, you know, that risk of, ooh, there's no mystique to it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, but it's great. There's a lot of promotion. There's a lot of people doing it. And, you know, it's really interesting to see what people are making. But yeah, it's, you know, we live in a country where anything is possible. So if you put in the work, you know, I always say, you know, we always say, why, you know, why not me? You know, if it's to him, why can't it happen to me too?
Right.
So.
Hey, Randall has an interesting question. He said, I've always heard sex sells. The statues of nudes used to sell better than others. Do you still find people like the nudes to collect?
You know, that's an interesting one. I haven't worked with a lot of nudes, but, you know, I have a few in my home. I think they're beautiful and they're classic. And, you know, I think they sell. I think they're relatable to people and, you know, they're representational, but, you know, we also live in a world is, you know, that we're also a little bit shut down with stuff like that. Like, you know, not everybody wants to hang a nude in their house.
Yeah.
You know,
we probably wouldn't. I tell you that right now.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Right, I mean, people are a little uptight about that, and I mean, that's fine, but I think people appreciate them, but I think they're always the fear of what will my neighbors think or the kid, we have kids or.
Right. Yeah, very interesting topic. All right, you still are involved with BNN-TV's It's All About Arts, but as a recruiter. I mean, talk about that. What's that look like?
You know, I'm always trying to look for interesting guests for the show. You know, and over the years, you know, we've interviewed some amazing people. You know, I got to interview Terrence McNally, you know, the great playwright, and Tommy Toon and Joyce Kilhaywick.
Oh, wow.
And you know, we've interviewed a lot of amazing celebrities that have come through the city, but there are so many great non-celebrities, or maybe will be a celebrity someday, so many people doing great things, you know, artistically in the city. I mean, there's a lot going on. You know, Boston City Hall does great things with art. They have three galleries over there. They give out an annual award. You know, there's a lot of stuff to know about, and it's nice to highlight.
That's really cool. We will definitely give, you know, a chance for you to talk about your website or give the address in a few minutes, but I do want people to be able to connect with you. Couple more questions. Faculty member at Sotheby's Institute of Art in New York City. That's awesome. What do you teach specifically?
Art business for artists.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, Sotheby's has a great program, and typically the classes weren't necessarily for artists. They were for people mm-hmm. who want to be on the business side of it. I want to, you know, run a gallery. I want to be work in a museum. I want to be a curator. I want to learn mm-hmm. about art law, things like that. So they decided to create a class for artists, but the business side of it. So I've been doing that for a few years.
Art law. I know a lot of lawyers. I've not run into a lawyer that has a practice for art law, but they have to be out there.
Yeah, there are definitely a few. And, you know, artists also, they need to know so many things about insurance.
Yeah.
What if your place floods and you lose all your art? Unfortunately, a lot of artists find out if they don't have a selling history or if they haven't kept good records,
yeah.
your insurance company will only cover their, you know, cost for materials.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's so much information they need to know about protecting themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of things. I always tell artists to register with your city or town as an artist,
mm-hmm.
Because sometimes there's a lot of perks to it. Sometimes there's reduced studio rents and, you know, there are things they need to know to help them along in their career, you know, not just about how to price your art or where to show it, but mm-hmm. lots of other things relating to insurance or lawyers or things like that.
And then protecting your intellectual property, protecting your art itself from being copied or stolen, right?
Absolutely. You know, a lot of artists really worry about that their images are selling for millions of dollars in other
yeah.
countries. And I say, it's probably not happening, but if you're so worried about it, let's talk about how to protect it.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
hey, Missy's got a good question here. She said, if a person were looking for an artist's work, how would they go about finding that work?
A specific artist?
I'm not sure. Let's say that, yeah.
Yeah, I would just, you know, if you're looking for a specific artist's work, most artists have websites,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. so I'd go directly, you know, just Google the name.
What about a genre or a particular style? Is there any way to do that?
Yeah. You know, again, just Google's such a great tool, you know, and whatever city or town you live in, you know, maybe pull up what galleries are available and find mm-hmm. out what kind of artists they represent. I have a gallery in an area called SOA, and there mm-hmm. are so many galleries, you know, 30 plus galleries, every conceivable genre, style. And it's just a blast to go through and see what people are doing.
Yeah. So that's probably the best advice. If I could editorialize, it's or throw my opinion in, go see some exhibits, some galleries and
yeah,
look
that's
around.
A great
yeah.
way to find out what you like too. Again, we think, you know, I like nudes or I like, you know, flowers. And then you go out and you're like, wow, I really love abstracts. I didn't know that. Like, why am I gravitating to these things? And, you know, it's just really fun to figure out what, you know, what causes different reactions.
Yeah. So here's kind of a big question. We only have time for a couple more. What's your best advice to artists wanting to succeed in their careers?
Professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, everything you do, think it through. I have artists who come running into my gallery during receptions and they have their phones out and they're like, look at my pictures. And that's not the way to approach somebody, you know. I think that professionalism goes a long way. Having work that is, you know, framed well, presented well, your letter writing skills, researching. Don't reach out to a gallery if you don't know who they represent. Don't waste people's time. I think that due diligence will lead to success.
It sounds like there could be a book in your future.
There is.
Is there really? I did not know that.
Yeah, there is.
How far off are you?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about it today.
Yeah.
And they basically said, you need to stop being so, again, so afraid, you know, to write, you know, because I don't consider myself a writer.
Yeah.
And they said, you just write it down and you get an editor, you know, just put it down. So I have the outline. It's called Exposed Secrets of an Art Rep. And it will be a lot of useful information, I hope useful, for people who want to have an art career with stories of my journey peppered in.
Well, here's an offer. When it's ready, whether it's a month or 20 months. It doesn't matter.
5 years, yeah.
I'll have you back on. I'd love to have you back on.
Thank you.
Book. All right. So that's the last thing I want to do. What's the best way? I know you have a complimentary session for artists if they want to consider maybe working with you. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Usually email, which is Suzanne@canvasfinearts.com.
Okay.
And, you know, just, you know, visit my website, take a look at it. But yeah, email's the best way.
Good. Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E @canvasfinearts.com, which is also the website.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I know you're busy, but I really appreciate it. And I believe the listeners are too.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
You got it. And thanks, everybody, for listening. This is a show about business and business challenges. If you've got concerns about the growth of your company, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or LinkedIn, and that's Winning Business Radio. Or drop me a note, kevin@winningbusinessradio.com. Our company, Winning Incorporated, we develop sales teams into high achievers and sales leaders into true coaches and mentors. I always say, hey, we're not a fit for everybody, but maybe we should have a conversation. Thank you, as always, to expert engineer Rebel Medler. Tune in again next Monday, December 24th at 4 p.m. Eastern, where my guest will be Megan Marini, entrepreneur. That's actually the 23rd. I got that wrong. Megan Marini, entrepreneur and talent optimization specialist. Really interesting person and a subject matter expert in leadership and communication. Until then, this is Kevin Hallinan.
You've been listening to Winning Business Radio with your host, Kevin Hallinan. If you missed any part of this episode, the podcast is available on Talk 4 Podcasting and iHeartRadio. For more information and questions, go to winningbusinessradio.com or check us out on social media. Tune in again next week and every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to listen live to Winning Business Radio on W4CY Radio, W4CY.com. Until then, let's succeed where others have failed and win in business with Kevin Hallinan and Winning Business Radio.